hardball hitting with a baseball bat. Kick up your heels, kid, and leave them all flat. What does it mean to be American?
This is Democracy Optimist. Here's your host, Professor Joshua Douglas of the University of Kentucky Rosenberg College of Law.
Welcome to Democracy Optimist, where we bring you the good, the bad, and the ugly on voting rights and election law with a dose of hope sprinkled in. Every election day, I am focused on numerous races around the country, including various local elections. How do I keep track? Through an indispensable resource called What's on the Ballot. That cheat sheet of elections everywhere is the brainchild of Daniel Nechanian, a reporter and the founder of Bolt magazine. Bolt covers the nuts and bolts of power and political change with a bottom-up approach, focusing primarily on state and local issues that shape public policy, but are largely overlooked by the national media. Daniel, welcome to Democracy Optimist.
It's really fun to join you. Thanks for having me.
So I love the What's on the Ballot cheat sheet. You've been doing this for several election cycles now. I think it started, in 2018? Tell us how it all started.
At the end of the day, I really love elections. I love following elections. I love understanding what is happening around the country and just the nitty-gritty of going in weeds in different places. And, for a while, you're right that this started in 2018. And for a while, I had actually left being a reporter. I stopped journalism and I had gone into doing a PhD, and I was still trying to track elections around the country, and I had created my own spreadsheet, on an Excel sheet or a Google sheet to try and see what's going on around the country for really my own sake, because there's so much happening, and I'm sure we'll go into that. And now at some point, I started to share that on Twitter, on social media. I cleaned it up a little, but, I think in 2018... I think maybe even 2017, it was still, a very informal spreadsheet that then, grew and grew. And then when I created Bolt already a couple of years ago, which really does a number of other things as well, it was essential for me to bring that into the project to be able to have even more capacity and resources to clean this up and make this a product for a lot of people to use. But, at the bottom, it's the product of an election geek who really wants to have tools to be able to follow this and share it with other people.
Yeah, and it's great. And so people can go to boltmag.org and find the What's on the Ballot cheat sheet that you can track, the elections. And again, it has the national races, but it has, really local things, county prosecutor, a ballot initiative in, some place in Pennsylvania that the local voters are deciding some aspect of local law. So how do you decide what to include and how do you actually keep track of it all?
Right. That's exactly right. A lot of most of what's on a sheet at any given moment is local elections, DA races, judges, sheriffs, a bond measure, or school board race. And I think what's really the core of the approach here is that there isn't some kind of huge qualitative break between, a federal election and a local election for how I think about things. Of course, the contexts are different, the power is different, the way in which issues are discussed is very productively different. But at the end of the day, the same reason why people get so engaged and interested by what's happening in Congress, what's happening in Washington, D.C., what's happening in the U.S. House race where they live, for the reasons why they care, the issues that make them care, or some of the same reasons, some of the same issues for which you should be looking, at what's happening with an affordable housing bond measure in the county next door, or a DA race somewhere in your state, or the election law you were just describing in Pennsylvania. And there's a continuum there. And I think what's really exciting and what's really evolved through the project of What's on the Ballot is how you know, we really create a tool for people to really see it all in one place. You know, they might know already where to follow the race for the U.S. Senate because they can go, you know, to Politico and whatnot. But if they also, for the same reasons, want to follow what's happening locally, you know, this is a one-stop shop where they can get a lot of things. And inversely, you know, a lot of people might not exactly have a full understanding of why they should care about these local races. But if you get them in by showing them the battle for Congress or the battle for the presidency, and that next to that, there's information about these other races that they might start having this like deeper sense of what to follow.
Yeah, and the other thing that's interesting about the what's on the ballot cheat sheet is that the state and local initiatives are categorized, right? So if you're interested in criminal justice, you can see the various issues, both statewide and local, and all, you can see the trends. You know, I'm, as you know, very interested in democracy and elections and voting rights. And so I always go directly to the voting rights initiatives to see, okay, you know, what cities are voting on ranked choice voting, or, you know, are there places looking at lowering the voting age to 16, or trying to impose some sort of public financing for local campaigns? And they're all in one place, which I think is really helpful. And as you know, I've used the resource a lot in my own writing to help, you know, kind of gather thoughts about what's on the ballot with respect to democracy issues. So you founded Bolts magazine in February 2022 with the express mission of focusing on state and local issues across the country. Why is that approach so critical? You know, there's so much discussion, as you said, of the presidential election or maybe control of Congress. And you obviously talk about that stuff, but you also focus on, you know, state courts and local initiatives. You have a story recently about how one county clerk in Pennsylvania is using an ice cream truck model to try to help voter registration, where they're, you know, basically driving voter registration trucks around the county like you might have an ice cream truck. So why do you have that kind of approach for Bolts?
That's a great question, and it gets exactly to what you were just saying about how you use our cheat sheet as well when it comes to our broader approach at Bolts. So on voting rights and criminal justice, those are two issues where local and state governments have so much authority and so much discretion about what's happening. If you care about these issues, of course the federal government isn't unimportant and federal courts aren't unimportant, but you're really missing so much of the story if we don't have an eye on state and local governments. And that's where a lot of the action matters. But that's where the challenge is as well. There are 3,000 counties around the nation. Obviously, there are 50 states and DC, and then within that, municipalities can have their own authorities as well. And that creates a lot of difficulty for following these issues. It creates effectively the very high barrier of entry for people who care about these issues or could care about these issues to understand what is going on, to engage their own local institutions, to learn from what's happening in another place than where they are. Even if they're reading their own local papers, they might not have a sense of what's happening around the country that may be relevant to what their own local officials are or aren't doing. And that's why I think it's very important. That's where Bolts comes from. You know, it's a tool really to, in various ways, lower the barrier of entry for people to understand, engage their state and local governments on these very important issues. So again, to learn about the important conflicts, development policies happening at the local level around the country, to learn from it, to unlearn from it if it's something that is going wrong, and also for the media, for journalists, you know, it's also a platform. It's always exciting when a journalist or a media source is using our resources, using our articles to learn about what's happening elsewhere, to enrich their own way of storytelling.
So Bolts, in many ways, I think, trying to fill the gap of many local news organizations, you know, where you've seen local newsrooms close or consolidate or just don't have the resources to focus on issues of local public policy. Why do you think the traditional news media is lacking on this score? And how is Bolt trying to fill that void?
It's a very important question, especially right now. There's so much news about news being in poor shape, media closing. I think when it comes to local news, you know, it's the first problem is that a lot of places don't have a robust local news ecosystem anymore, and that is itself a problem for information, a problem for democracy. You know, Bolt isn't an alternative to local news. It's not a competitor to local news. I think it's best thought of, we think of it as a collaborative tool at best. And you know, I think the first purpose is to plug holes in places where there is a news desert, and something important is happening on our very specific set of issues that Bolt covers, right? So in a way, I'm much more excited to get the chance, as we did last year, for instance, to cover a DA race in rural Pennsylvania, which was a very interesting DA race in rural Pennsylvania, hours from Philly, where a police shooting had really become a defining issue. And that is more exciting than covering a DA race in Philly, maybe, or New York, because of the opportunity to explain something, cover differences that may not exist elsewhere just because there's local media. But also, more importantly, there is a lot of places that have very robust local media, but we can bring our thematic expertise, our understanding of what's happening in different places to enrich maybe what is going on in terms of the coverage of a specific issue, to bring to bear some developments from one place in the country in covering what's happening somewhere else. For instance, if we know that there's an ice cream truck in Pennsylvania to help voting, that helps us ask questions in California or in Texas about whether or not a similar approach is being used.
Yeah, so, you know, you're focusing on voting rights, as you said, and issues of democracy. You're focusing on criminal justice, which we can touch upon in a minute. And also, we mentioned before, state courts, another undercovered area. You know, one resource I love that Bolt has is this guide to every single state Supreme Court. So you can go and look at, you know, who's on the state Supreme Court and the partisan makeup and just the details. Why is covering state courts so important to you?
And that's such a great example, state courts in particular, of everything we've just been talking about. Because state courts, especially in the wake of Dobbs, especially in the wake of the shift of the federal judiciary to the right in a way that makes their decisions a bit more predictable on a lot of issues, state courts have really come into view as institutions that are seeing some of the same fights, some of the same important policy battles around abortion rights, around voting rights, around the death penalty, as we've always been seeing and aware of at the federal level. And yet the attention, the understanding of what's happening in state courts, who has the power on what court to do what, is really lacking. You know, if tomorrow we got, a text alert from the New York Times that a justice on the U.S. Supreme Court has chosen to step down, I'm betting that everyone who is right now, who hears this right now will immediately know what that means, what the implications are, how that will shift the court or not, right? And yet, I also think that nearly everyone who's listening to this would have trouble knowing what a retirement or an election or an appointment in their own state court or another state court would mean to issues of abortion rights, issues of voting rights, and that's an important gap that we should try collectively as media to fill, to pay more attention to the importance of state courts, to the appointments, elections, vacancies that are happening there, and what the balance of power is, what are the different clauses in different state constitutions. I mean, you yourself have done some amazing work, right, on trying to pay attention to how a state constitution can ground the claims when it comes to voting rights. But all of that needs more understanding, because a lot of change is happening at the state level.
Yeah, and it's important to recognize how much state court decisions touch people's lives, probably more so than most U.S. Supreme Court decisions. You know, maybe Dobbs and the abortion right context is an outlier. But, you know, most Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court cases don't have the same kind of impact on everyday lives as many state Supreme Court decisions. And yet we seem to focus so much on the U.S. Supreme Court instead of state court. So it's really great that Bolts is taking on that approach.
And just a quick point to say that in many states, elections, there are elections for state court. Now, we could discuss whether or not that's a good thing, whether people approve it, but it is the case, right? It is the case that in about half the states or more, there are elections. And often people do not pay attention to these. And there's often a lot of strange things that happen in Supreme Court elections, money pours in. So like the people with money understand the importance of these elections. And so it's important that everyone really is paying attention to who sits on these courts.
Yeah. So everything seems so polarized today. And you're focusing on very polarized issues of democracy, of voting rights, of criminal justice. How do you maintain a neutral approach as a nonprofit, nonpartisan news organization?
Yeah, you know, I think what's important is that we both are not covering voting rights as a way to cover politics. It's really the other way around, covering politics as a way of understanding what is going on voting rights, how what innovations, what policies are making it easier or harder to get to this principle that everyone should have a voice in how they are governed. And importantly, you know, if that's your governing question, again, what are the policies, the hurdles to this idea of democracy, the promise of democracy? There is a story to be told everywhere, whether it's a Republican place, a Democratic place, whether there's innovations that are happening in a blue state or red state, whether there's harm being done to the principle of democracy. You know, pretty much. Every state, for instance, other than Maine and Vermont, do not allow some people to vote based on a felony conviction, for instance. In many states, it's much more restrictive. But there is in every state other than Maine, Vermont, some form of organizing right now to try and expand the franchise. And so there are stories to be told there, whether it's in California, a blue state where there is an active effort to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot to allow people to vote from prison, or whether it's a red state like Florida or Virginia, where the law is much more restrictive and voting rights organizers are maybe choosing a more incremental approach to what they would like to change. But those are all struggles that are happening at the same time in different ways. And we can keep an eye on all that, irrespective of whether the individuals in office are on the left or on the right.
So Daniel, you have your pulse on kind of nationwide voting issues as well as at the local level. And it raises the question of why people even should bother voting, right? Especially if you live in a so-called swing state and you think you know how the presidential election is going to come down. What's the point? Why should people vote?
That's a great question for Bolts especially, and for what we're talking about, because we get that so often, that the way in which the presidential election is structured makes the majority of people in the country sort of beyond feel like their vote is unimportant, right? But a lot of these other struggles, these conflicts, these battles of criminal justice and voting rights we're talking about, but also everything else, is happening at the local level, right? A DA primary in Chicago, which is, for instance, happening this year, is going to be extremely important to the size of the jail population in this huge part of the country that in November will not be especially important for the presidential race, to the extent that Illinois is not a swing state for the presidential election, right? If you care about affordable housing, the city council races in LA are extremely important this year, for instance, in terms of competing visions of housing really going at it. If you care, the voting rights for people with felony convictions, as we were just talking about, there are stuff happening in Mississippi and Florida that that you should be paying attention to. So there's always, you know, there's always organizing activism on the left, on the right, whatever your issue is, or around the country that is trying to change the way in which our lives are structured. And elections are not the be all end all of what's happening there, but it is definitely a place where it's always gonna come to a head.
Yeah, that's really an important message that, you know, local elections have such an important impact on people's lives. Daniel Nechanian is a reporter and the founder of Bolt Magazine. Daniel, thank you so much for joining Democracy Optimist.
It's been really great. Thank you.
Josh, you mentioned at the top of the show that every election year you rely on Bolt's What's on the Ballot cheat sheet to track various elections. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, every year this is such a vital resource for me as I'm trying to figure out what elections that I want to be focusing on and which ones to cover. I went back and looked again at the 2023 cheat sheet, and it reminded me that in every election cycle, there are important state and local races that impact democracy. For example, in 2023, Louisiana voters agreed to ban so-called Zuckerbucks, or private donations, to election officials to help run an election. Rockville, Maryland voters rejected a measure to recommend lowering the voting age to 16 for local elections, so it won't follow other Maryland cities that currently let 16 and 17-year-olds vote in their city or school board elections. There were local ballot measures regarding criminal justice in Colorado, and five local jurisdictions voted on election administrators, such as county clerks, which included in Seattle the defeat of an election denier who had ties to conspiracy groups. I probably wouldn't have known much about many of those elections were it not for the What's on the Ballot cheat sheet. I'm sure that this year's guide for 2024 will have significant elections beyond the presidential election this year. Connecticut voters, for example, will decide whether to amend their state constitution to allow no-excuse absentee voting. There will be plenty of local measures on the ballot as well.
All right, give us a fun election fact.
To me, some of the most important races that I track using the What's on the Ballot cheat sheet are for elections for Secretary of State, as that individual in most states is in charge of the state's elections. But the Secretary of State is the chief election officer in only 38 states, 31 who are elected and 7 who are appointed, usually by the governor or the legislature. In 10 states, the chief election officer is not the Secretary of State and is appointed typically by the Board of Elections or a state election commission. And 2 states, Alaska and Utah, have their lieutenant governor serve as the chief election officer. Many states have pretty complicated structures. In Kentucky, we have both an elected Secretary of State and an appointed Board of Elections, which jointly oversee Kentucky elections. We also have at the county level the county clerk and a local Board of Elections. The Kentucky Board of Elections, the statewide board, has 8 members, all appointed by the governor, with the requirement that 4 are Republican and 4 are Democrats. The Secretary of State serves on the board as well and can provide a tie-breaking vote. The staff of the Board of Elections is also explicitly bipartisan.
And what's one thing we can do to support democracy?
You could probably see this one coming. Check out Bolt's and subscribe to its weekly newsletter. This free subscription will let you stay up to date on issues of local criminal justice, voting rights, and other important issues. Then share your favorite article with a friend.
To be American.
Thanks for joining us for this series of conversations about how elections work, about the value of your vote, and about challenges to your right and freedom to make choices at your local polling place. Find our series online at democracyoptimist.com. Joshua Douglas, writer and host, Mike Savage, executive producer. I'm Tom Martin, your series producer. Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer. Democracy Optimist theme song, American, by Madeline Peru. Mason Graber and Stephen Dabney, research assistants. Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer. Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. Democracy Optimist is a special Eastern Standard series produced by Dynamics Productions for Richmond, Kentucky-based public radio station WEKU.